You are tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. This is The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The topic today is a proposal for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly to establish a Sustainable Resources Commission. Guests are Borough Assembly Member Willie Dunn. Willie, are you there?
I'm here. How are you doing, Kathleen?
Well, we're all hanging on best we can. Thanks so much for participating.
Thanks for having me.
And Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. Also, Scott Waterman from Spirited Energy Ventures.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning to everyone. And thanks to everybody for making all this work. Instead of throwing everybody in a room together, here's how we do it now. There is a line open for questions and comments, and that number is 235-7721. Chloe's on the phones, ready to take your calls. Also, you could email a question to Kathleen@kbbi.org. Or if you just have a comment and you want to participate, call 235-7721. So I'm looking at the draft proposal for a Sustainable Resources Commission, and it's got a lot of logos on it. Kenai Change, Sustainable Seward, Cook Inlet Keeper, Kachemak Bay Conservation Society, and Ground Truth Alaska. So I'd like to start with Penelope Haas. Penelope, what's your position at Kachemak Bay Conservation Society? And from what I understand, this proposal came from community members, not from within the assembly. Is that correct?
Yeah, so I work with Kachemak Bay Conservation Society as a contractor, and I am also a board member. And we, KBCS, have been working with those organizations you listed and community members from across the peninsula to develop this proposal. We have been speaking with assembly members throughout the process, but this really is a grassroots proposal that I think has quite long roots that date back years, but the effort kind of came to a head around the creation of the 2019 comprehensive plan this past fall, at which point there was a whole lot of effort from all corners of the peninsula to try to get some strong commitments in our comprehensive plan for climate action planning and a group that would be responsible for that.
And Assembly Member Willie Dunn, can you give people an understanding of what the comprehensive plan is? Because this is an attempt to add a Sustainable Resources Commission to the comp plan. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, first, I did want to say that although I am a member of the Assembly, on today's program, I'm just expressing my personal views, so I'm not representing the Assembly per se, but
well, can you give us you are definitely positioned to give people a good idea of what the comprehensive plan is. It's huge,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go
and
ahead.
I've been very involved with that. So, yeah, as Penelope said that you know, the groups involved in this current proposal have been involved with borough issues for years. And last fall, last November, about 6 months ago, the Borough Assembly adopted our most recent updated comprehensive management plan. And I'm getting a little feedback, not sure if that's coming from me or somewhere else. But in any event, the comprehensive plan is a process. It's updated periodically, and there's a lot of public input, a lot of staff input, and we had a contractor go out around the borough getting input from citizens. And then it was reviewed by the Planning Commission, lots of public information or public input at that level also. And one of the things that happened was due to input from the public, some items were added to the comprehensive management plan. One of those was a near-term strategy of creating a sustainability commission to address climate change issues, the changing environment on the borough, try to improve our response to food security, energy security, do some long-range planning. So that was added into the comprehensive plan thanks to many groups. We had lots of testimony at the Borough Assembly from the public, including high school students who were very involved and very interested in this. And the Assembly adopted that plan with those that language for under the land use focus that we would have strategies, including a sustainability commission.
And how is that comp plan, how do you use it as an Assembly member? And, of course, other people use it, right? Planning commission members use it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the planning, comprehensive plan is a guiding document. And we refer to it quite often. As you said, the Planning Commission and the Planning Department use it. It's a very important tool for them. And the Borough Assembly members will often refer to the comprehensive plan when developing legislation or making changes to our borough code or creating new codes. We refer to the comp plan to make sure that we are following the wishes of the people through that planning process.
And Penelope Haas, I'll get to you in just a minute, Scott Waterman, but I want to get back to Penelope Haas for a minute. How was this? I'm looking at a document, the proposal for the Sustainable Resources Commission. How was this developed? It's got a lot of information in it.
Yeah, like you say, it's pretty long.
But it's sourced. It's sourced from NERS, from Kachemak Bay Estuary and Research Reserve. It's sourced from information from Cook Inlet. It's got Homer City Council and Seldovia Council on board, or at least they approved recommending it. Is that right?
Yeah, so there's kind of, I guess, two parts to it. There's the beginning is sort of why is this commission needed? And the information that supports that position is very much peninsula-based. So it's information about some of the severe changes that we are facing as communities. So, for example, the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge has noted that in the past 50 years, our peninsula has 62% less precipitation. And we, people who are advocating this commission, believe that information and information like it that about all these very severe changes needs to be hardwired into our policies, that we need to be prepared for a drier peninsula. It does also say in the background there some of the things that local governments have done that this would sort of be following up on. And during the comprehensive plan period, when we were developing the proposal for the comprehensive plan, there were resolutions of support from the cities of Soldotna, Homer, and Seldovia. So that's what's referenced there. And then as far as where does the second part come from, the second part of the proposal kind of is the nuts and bolts of the purpose and scope of the commission and who would be appointed and so forth. And the ideas from that come from looking at the way that our current planning commission is set up. So, for example, our current planning commission is modeled in a similar way where there's representatives from each of the first-class cities in our borough. And we follow that same model. And then also there's representatives from the different regions. So that's just very similar to the way the Planning Commission is set up. This also gets information from other sustainability commissions in Alaska and in the lower 48. So the Juneau established the Sustainability Commission a long time ago, and we looked at what they did, and we talked with them about what we could learn from them and what we could do better. And Fairbanks North Star Borough is currently setting up the Sustainability Commission, so we spoke with them about that. And so that's kind of the grand background of it. There are lots of details that came from all over the place, but some of the things that are new and that I don't really necessarily come from anywhere, but we decided as a group that we really wanted to make sure that we did is that the commission would not meet in one place every month. Instead, the commission would meet in different places every month. And so for one month, it would meet in Homer. Then the next month, it would meet in Saldovia. Then the next month, it would meet in Seward and so on. And this we felt was really important, part of what we're trying to achieve, which is a stronger democratic process on some of these decisions. There's a lot of thoughts and ideas in our communities about some of these issues like food security that we want this commission to be sort of grounded in the ideas that are in these communities, and we can't have people always going back and forth to Distelbaum and speaking for 3 minutes.
And it seems like a lot of some information you just mentioned about the science on there being far less precipitation on the peninsula, that goes to inform like the Alaska Division of Forestry expanding the fire season. It definitely directly, the science directly affects how we live on the peninsula right now.
No doubt. And agencies are responding, and we're just, I think we see this commission as a way to, in some ways, coordinate agencies so that, you know, most of the boroughs owned by the state and by the federal government. So as far as land management is concerned, this commission would definitely be performing a coordination role and trying to make sure everybody's on the same page and that the best, most current information on our climate is being used to make our plans and make our priorities. Another one that I think is on everybody's radar right now is water resources.
Definitely. So Scott Waterman is on the line still. Thanks for holding on. Scott, what's your involvement in creating a proposal for the Sustainable Resources Commission?
Well, I've been long interested in energy security issues for Alaska. I was the energy programs manager for Alaska Public Finance for 20-plus years, and I have looked at the potentials for energy efficiency and renewables and a different type of energy security system for Alaska over the years. One of the things, you know, to carry on your comments about changing climate, the temperatures on the Kenai Peninsula have risen. And when I worked at Alaska Housing, we had a software program that used local temperatures. And we had to revise the 30-year average temperatures had gone up by about 7 degrees in Anchorage for design temperature. And in the Kenai and Homer in particular, the design temperature, the temperature we try to design our buildings to each year,
Scott,
gone up.
I have to interrupt you for just a minute, Scott. If you're using a speakerphone, could you use the handset instead?
Okay,
you're very difficult to understand.
All right, sorry. So I was just saying that the design temperature, the temperature at which we have to design our buildings to, has risen by 5 to 7 degrees in South Central Alaska alone. So I've been interested in energy security issues, and there's a number of different things that are coming up on the Security and Resiliency or Sustainability Commission that would deal with energy security.
Okay, thanks. And have you been a part of drafting this proposal?
No, I just recently have gotten involved. It seemed like an interesting proposal, and I think it's one that is really a valuable planning tool.
Okay, thanks. Stay on the line, and be sure to jump in when you want to add something.
Will do.
I know it's tough when we're not all looking at each other. Thanks. Now, Scott Waterman just brought up the rising water temperatures on the peninsula.
Air temperature. Sorry.
Air temperature. Well, yeah. I've been reading about the water temperature and how it affects our salmon. Penelope, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I know that probably most people noticed how hot it was this past summer, and there's different, you know, water temperatures that we would be concerned about when we're thinking about salmon. There's, you know, they spend a lot of their time out in the ocean, and so the water temperatures where they are feeding for that portion of their life cycle are relevant. And then there's the portion of their life cycle in which they're going upstreams, and that, you know, and so we're concerned about water temperatures at two different parts of their life cycle. Here on the Kenai Peninsula, where the borough would be concerned is or have any authority is on the freshwater portion of the salmon life cycle. And Cook Inlet Keeper has been coordinating with organizations across Alaska to monitor stream temperatures. We would love for the Department of Fish and Game to be doing it as well, but at this point, this group has really seen some just shocking numbers. They've got in-stream temperature monitors that are showing that we've got temperatures in the mid-70s in some of our streams here in Cook Inlet, and those are temperatures that salmon, as far as we know, cannot survive or reproduce with any success. So if we want salmon for the future of our Kenai Peninsula, we really need to be making sure that we're planning to do whatever we can to keep those temperatures down. What are things that we can do? The borough could manage its lands to really try to focus on that and prioritize shading of those streams and protecting all the cold water refugia that are in there. So there's some places, salmon do seem to be able to survive those high temperatures, and how are they doing it? They seem to be going into these little hidey holes where there's cooler water, either coming from underground or from a glacier or something like that. And so making sure that we know where those cold water refuges are and protecting them is something that we think everyone on the peninsula can get on board with.
And Willie, go ahead.
Just want to interject something about the name of this commission.
Yeah.
So when we sent you this draft, the name of the commission was a Sustainable Resources Commission, but we have recently changed the name to a Resilience and Security Commission. The reason we changed the name is because we recognize that some of these issues tend to be political lightning rods, and we are very, very focused on making sure that this is not perceived and not actually carried out in any manner as a politically motivated group, that it doesn't serve one particular political affiliation, but that it is absolutely a hazard mitigation, a food security and energy security, focused group that takes care of the interests of every member of our peninsula. So we just wanted to make sure that we weren't using language that seemed to identify the commission with any particular political party.
And Willie Dunn, I want to know about mechanisms that already exist within the comp plan or within the borough to address or make space for this. I know that there is they're in the comp plan. There is a directive to develop a climate change action plan, isn't there?
That is a recommendation in the comp plan for a near-term strategy that the borough develop not only a commission to address these issues, but to develop a plan to deal with the changing environment on the Kenai. And then you also were discussing the issues with salmon, and most of your listeners probably are well aware that the borough for many years now has had a interest in protecting salmon habitat. We have the Anadromous Waters Habitat Protection Codes, and we have staff people that review and enforce those regulations. Basically, that protects habitat within 50 feet of an anadromous waterway, salmon spawning or fish spawning waterways. So those concerns were identified many years ago, and those regulations have developed and evolved over the years. We have a Kenai River Center manager who oversees those habitat protections. And it's kind of a misnomer. It's called the Kenai River Center, but it addresses all anadromous waters around the boroughs and not just the Kenai River. And then also, you know, the borough's been involved in many issues that I think could fall under the umbrella of a commission like this if it's adopted. There's agricultural policies. Our land manager and our planning department has been working on improving agricultural production in the borough and trying to make agricultural land more available. We deal with solid waste. That's a huge issue that we've been involved with composting programs at the landfills. Right now there's a methane collection.
The Soldotna landfill?
At the Soldotna landfill, there's methane collection, and there's we're working with HEA right now to generate electricity from that methane that's collected there. The Homer landfill doesn't have enough methane to make that feasible, but Soldotna landfill does have that. So you know, all of these concepts of energy security, food security, habitat protection, you know, creating a diversified economy and protecting our commercial fishermen, sport fisheries, all that. It's happening to a certain extent right now, but a commission like this could, oversee and help with public communication and coordination with all those issues.
And does the comp plan get updated every year?
No. The comp plan, actually our last update before 2019 was 2005, which I think is way too long to go. So we had almost 15 years before we had an update. So,
do you have a perception of how goals changed over those 15 years due to new information?
Well, yeah, because we did identify the issues that have been discussed, such as the drought we had in summer of 2019, where the city of Seldovia, the reservoir, almost ran out of water. The community of Nanuwalek actually did completely run out of water in their drinking water system. So those things have been identified since the 2005 update. I think there's been more of a focus on diversifying the economy. For many years we got a lot of income and a lot of employment from the oil industry, and that's still a significant sector. But I think the new comp plan identifies the diversification of our economy as being really important. So I would like to see it updated more than once every 15 years, but this is what we have right now, and so we've got a number of changes in here to work towards.
And you're listening to The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The topic is the creation of
a Resilience and Security Commission.
There you go. Resilience and Security Commission for the Kenai Peninsula Borough to add to the comprehensive plan. If you have any comments or questions for the panelists, the number to call is 235-7721. And the extension is, no extension. Chloe is standing by to take your calls, 235-7721. Now, I want to get back to Scott Waterman because there are a lot of sustainable energy issues in the comp plan. First of all, before I get to Scott, Penelope, how can a person who isn't me and received it in their email take a look at this thing?
Yeah, so we've created a landing pad for people to check it out. You can go to the website kenaichange.org. kenaichange.org/sustainable. And you can read the full proposal right there. You can also make suggestions. And we really, really welcome those. And You can also sign a letter and tell the assembly that you support it. And I also just want to emphasize, as far as what is this document and how final is it? So this is just a community proposal. It's not an ordinance at the moment. And at the point that it does become an ordinance, it's going to be open again for a great deal of public comment. And so this thing that you will see if you go to KenaiChange.org is a proposal, and we're really trying to do our best to get the, you know, the best proposal we can. But there's going to be a broader public input period starting on May 19th when it is introduced at the assembly.
And Willie Dunn, are you going to be introducing this?
Well, we're talking with a number of assembly members right now to see gauge interest in. And I haven't committed to that yet, so
okay.
I think that we'll have some.
I expect the goal would be to get
on that soon.
I expect the goal would be to get more than one person to introduce it.
I think there's several members are interested. Yeah.
Okay, and so back to Scott Waterman. There are the Sustainable Resources and Commission. Oh, darn it. Penelope, I'm going to write it down. Tell me.
Resilience and security. Sorry to change it on you.
Well, what is? Well, let me ask you.
Resilience and security.
While I've got you here, I ask this question all the time. What's the difference in the name? Why does it matter?
Well, I think I tried to explain it. We just are trying not to push any political, you know, any buttons. There's nothing different in the actual language of the plan that we changed, but.
And what do you consider to be? To be difficult about the idea of calling it the Sustainable Resources Commission? What politicizes it?
Well, I don't know exactly, except that I've talked to a lot of people who told me that their friends would not like that name, or that they that it rubs them even the wrong way because it sounds like a leftist byword.
So the word sustainable?
I'm not sure exactly, you know, the whole history of that. We heard so much feedback from people across the peninsula saying, you know, this just doesn't sound like me. So we picked resilience and security, which we think have not taken a, you know, don't fall on either the left or the right in terms of, you know, people's associations.
Okay. Thanks.
But it's not just about the look. We're really trying to create a commission that is not a political body. It's just like the fire department. You know.
Gotcha. So I'm going to get to you now, Scott Waterman. I'm doing it. There are climate action plans for Homer and Seward and the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge monitors climate change. University of Alaska monitors it. We also have a relationship with HEA where Bradley Lake Hydro and Grant Lake Hydroelectric, Willie Dunn mentioned the Soldotna Landfill Gas Project and electric vehicle charging and the development of regional building efficiency standards by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And I know that is where you used to hang your hat at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. How would this plan inform building efficiency standards?
So there's a lot of different things that happen with that. The building energy efficiency standards have been in place for the state of Alaska, anyone who gets a mortgage through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, since 1991. And in the main, I think most of residential buildings have moved towards a much higher standard of efficiency. I think housing in general is about twice as efficient if it's been built since about 2005 than if it was built during the 1980s, early 1980s. The energy use per square foot is dropped by about half. So it's made a lot of progress on the residential side. On the commercial side, unfortunately, not so much progress has been made. In 2013, commercial buildings were added to the building energy efficiency standard, but the financing leverage for commercial buildings is not there. And while some banks do require a higher energy efficiency standard, a lot of financing does not for commercial buildings. So the energy standards for commercial buildings are lacking, and that could be a big improvement. The other part of it is on the public facility side. The state does require new buildings to meet a higher efficiency standard in many cases, not all, but in many cases, if it's using state funds. But the existing infrastructure, the buildings that are already built, are in need of retrofit. And we looked at least 300-plus buildings across the state and found that in the main, energy savings could be 30 to 50%. And these are buildings that can use upwards of $100,000 a year or more in energy costs. Some of the high schools in Anchorage and Fairbanks were using as much as $700,000 a year in energy. So, and statewide, we calculated that there was over $640 million every year spent on energy. And if you were to look at even a 25% savings on that, you know, that's over $125 million a year. So there's a lot of opportunity for that. Schools, borough buildings, city buildings, all of those municipal types of buildings, there's an awful lot of potential for improved energy efficiency, and there are many ways that those efficiencies can be achieved.
Kathleen?
Thank you. Go ahead, Willie.
So, yeah, Scott brought up an important concept, too, with the need for upgrading energy efficiency in commercial buildings, and this is an example of where the borough could be involved and could help not only businesses, but improve cost savings. The state last year, or maybe the year before, passed a new law allowing municipalities to adopt what's called CPACE, or the Commercial Property Assessment for Clean Energy, and it would be kind of an innovative way for businesses to finance energy upgrades and save themselves money and conserve energy, and it would just be a win-win for everybody involved. So the borough, the local municipalities need to sign on to that, get involved with that, and that's something I've been discussing with other municipalities, Anchorage and Fairbanks, that are very interested in that. So that's just one example of where a commission like this could be involved.
And while I have you, I want to get your expertise on the line here. Would a commission, a resilience and security commission added to the comp plan require, if it were adopted, would it require a fiscal note for like financial and tech support?
Well, that would be one of the questions we need to investigate. That's certainly something that we need to understand before we move forward with it. Right now, it seems like it could fit very well within existing structure of the borough administration through the planning department. But there would certainly be some cost with a new commission, with travel expenses and those kinds of things. But I think the cost would be pretty minimal and would be greatly, greatly, greatly offset by the cost savings to the borough in the long run. You know, sometimes we need to invest a little bit of money to realize savings in the future.
And Penelope Haas, I'm looking at the plan. Can you list any public or private institutions who support community and resource development that might be able to provide tech and financial support?
Well, so, yeah, the question of how this thing is going to get paid for is definitely a good one. And we have provided in the draft here that the commission would actively seek grant support. And there is quite a bit of money on the national level to support local efforts like these for resilience and security. So right now, actually, we're communicating with cities and boroughs across Alaska who are beginning to participate in a grant-seeking effort as a group, so that funds would land in cities and boroughs across Alaska to do this kind of, resilience and security and energy work. So there is, like, if you have a commission like this, there's quite a good potential for large grant sums to come in.
From
that
who?
Would be distributed across the peninsula.
From who?
Grants? Well, at the moment, I'm not actually working on the grant writing part as much as coordinating with other communities in Alaska. And then there is, we're working with a group called GEOS and Lotus, who are, I think, both based in Colorado, who are professional grant seekers. I've also been communicating with the Woods Hole Institute, who are also professional grant seekers for large-scale funding of research on mitigating climate change and adapting to climate change. So those are two sources of funding, or, you know, fund seekers who we're communicating with about possible assistance on supporting a commission like this. And then I guess I just do want to emphasize the cost of the commission itself is, as it's written right now, is pretty low. There are huge potentials for partnerships with nonprofits around the peninsula to do some of the work that needs to be done. And then there's also savings that we expect to come from some of the effort that we would like to put back into the commission. So we don't know exactly what we could save, but, for example, the City of Anchorage Solid Waste Department, over the course of 4 years, saved nearly $80,000 just on, you know, switching some light bulbs and making some kind of simple efficiency upgrades. So we do expect to see revenues on coming in back or saved on the borough side from things that Scott was talking about, and that is also quite important.
And Scott Waterman, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to kind of go down that path. There's a lot of different types of efficiency improvements that can be made, but I also wanted to kind of add, you know, just for example, you know, almost all of us write a check every month or somehow pay our electric bill through Homer Electric Association. Homer Electric Association buys a lot of gas from Cook Inlet gas producers, which are mostly...
Well, there's only one, right? There's only one now.
Yeah. But they're based out of state. And so when we're writing a check, you know, for $100 or $200 a month or whatever our electric bill is, you know, probably about 70% of that money leaves the state almost immediately. So the more, the less energy we use and the more that we can produce locally, that money then circulates within the economy. So that's another aspect of this. It's a little bit of an indirect route, but the direct pieces are efficiency improvements on borough buildings and schools. Schools have a tremendous potential for savings, and the payback on many of the projects is three to 5 to 7 years, depending on the scale of the project. But The Matanuska Susitna School District has saved several millions of dollars over the past few years to because of their efficiency efforts. The Anchorage School District, likewise. The city and borough of Fairbanks have saved several millions of dollars in their efficiency efforts. There's a lot of potential in a number of different areas, and the money may not come back directly to the commission, but it does come back to the borough general fund and for those types of projects.
And the goal of, well, one of the duties of the commission would be to produce a cost-benefit analysis for all different sectors, for renewable energy, for agriculture, for tourism, for fishing. What are some of the other duties that you perceive, that you believe the commission would create? Penelope?
Yeah, so I think food security is pretty high up there on a lot of people's lists as a concern and a value in an area that has a lot of potential for growth. So you're asking, yeah, how would this commission pay for itself? And I do think one of the ways it might pay for itself is in job creation, and job creation particularly around local food production. So if the borough, there's a number of ways the borough might be able to support local food production. So if you think about agriculture, Willie mentioned that there is existing in our land management office a proposal for making some borough lands available to as agriculture. You know, they've identified certain lands owned by the borough that are well suited for agriculture. They've got good water, they've got good sun, they've got good soil. And this commission would serve as sort of the citizen expert body that would help oversee a project like that would try to make borough lands available to farmers so that we're investing long-term in local agriculture production. It could also get involved in education around food processing and food distribution on a local level, and on trying to provide farmers access to the quality workers they need seasonally through internship programs and education programs in our schools. Those are just some ideas that have been floating around as we talk with farmers and with folks in the borough on agriculture and food security. Similar things are true for fishery management. I think with this coronavirus pandemic, many people are concerned about how far out on a limb we are with our supply chains, and the question of how are local fishermen going to make a living, and who are they going to sell their fish to, and will the markets exist, is not a problem that is really restricted to now. It reveals, I think, a longer-term issue that we have where we produce a ton of good food here locally, and then a lot of it gets sent out, or we don't produce enough food for ourselves just to eat. So trying to get local fishery folks to be able to sell their products directly, there's a lot the borough could do to help that, just with dockside selling and helping create the infrastructure that's needed to get those fish to our tables.
Well, I feel like it's time.
In the Kenai Peninsula.
I feel like it's time to circle back a little bit, because I want to make sure that people understand that the creation of a resilience and security commission to add to the comp plan for the borough does not make policy or mandate action in any way. Willie Dunn, can you give some insight on, I realize we talked about it at the beginning of the hour, but it's time to talk about it again, because we've gone down a lot of avenues here about what could happen as a result of a resilience and security commission. But if you could remind people what that commission actually does.
Sure. And just to be clear also, we already have that concept in our comprehensive management plan. that was added into the comp plan and adopted last fall by the assembly. So the concept is already in the plan. So now the proposal that's come through communities from around the borough, and by the way, it's not just Homer. There's people in Seward and Kenai, Soldotna. So it's efforts from all around the borough, a grassroots effort. That effort is to now create this proposal and bring it to the assembly to see if there's interest in actually establishing a commission. So there's many ways that could play out. I imagine most likely it could be part of the planning department, a commission within the planning department, and very similar to our planning commission. We already have a model for citizens from around the borough who meet regularly to review and adopt proposals around land use planning. However, the existing planning commission does have legal authority under state statute, so resilience and security commission would not have, it would be more of an advisory commission. It wouldn't have any necessarily have any authority. So, it's still in the very early stages. I've been very impressed with the work that people from around the borough have been putting into this. They started several years ago by getting it into the comp plan. Now they're moving forward to hopefully adopt it into borough code, which would require an ordinance. So that's under discussion, and hopefully there'll be some action on that in the next month or so. So I think it's too early to say exactly what the commission, where it would be in the administration, what it exactly would do. The proposal is just that right now, and there's a lot of public input yet to come if and when this does get moved forward.
Oh, Willie Dunn, thank you so much for adding to the hour. I appreciate you adding your expertise. Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society, I want you to go back over, if you wouldn't mind, how people can access this proposal and what the opportunities are going to be for people to comment on it and add to it.
Yeah, so you can read the proposal online at kenaichange.org/sustainable. So the full proposal is there. At any time, we are asking people to please take a look at it as much as possible and call up their assembly members and tell them what you think about it. And if you have any suggestions for a change, go ahead and share that with your assembly member. At this point, with the coronavirus, all timelines are sort of subject to change, but the assembly members who will probably be introducing this or discussing introducing it on May 19th, at which point there would be a public process that would start. It would be introduced. The public could comment on that introduction. And then there will be a public hearing, if that timeline goes on June 2nd, again, at which point there will be opportunity for public comment written and call in. And I don't know if they'll pass it in one sitting or not. I might expect it would go on for a little while. But May 19th, it will be introduced, we think, and June 2nd would then be the public hearing.
Okay, thanks, Penelope Haas. I'm going to go around to my panelists one last time to ask for final comments. Willie Dunn, anything from you to wrap up?
Thank you, Kathleen. Well, first of all, thanks for having us on, having me on. It's been a while since I've been on the coffee table, and I always enjoy communicating with my constituents on the Lower Kenai Peninsula this way. I often get lots of good feedback after these coffee tables. And it's been an honor for me to, serve on the Borough Assembly and to be part of the process. It's not always easy. It's sometimes frustratingly slow. But, the fact that I can help make a difference is very rewarding to me. And I really do think that we need to do some more long-range planning, that a commission like this could do great work in some long-range planning and affect some positive change and cost savings to the borough. And that's a huge thing we're looking at, especially with energy issues. And that, you know, diversifying our economy and to me, diversity equals stability. I mean, we're seeing that with oil prices in the state right now. Depending on one industry for our economic livelihood is disastrous when the prices collapse. So looking at diversity and sustainability and long-range planning, I think, is a win-win for the borough.
Okay, thanks, Willie Dunn. How about you, Scott Waterman?
So to echo a little bit of what Willie just said, I think there are an awful lot of opportunities for economic development that this Resilience and Security Commission can add to, and it is a public process that people get to participate in. But with the COVID-19 pandemic, as we transition through this, I think there's going to be an awful lot of businesses that are in fairly rough shape on the other side of this as we come out. And this commission could help really shape some economic opportunities for the borough that would really be able to put some projects in place relatively quickly and be able to add to it. And Willie touched on, you know, the low price of oil, but just as easily a different situation could arise where we end up with skyrocketing prices of oil, and then that's another burden to our businesses and residential pocketbooks when the price of heating fuel and electricity skyrockets. So there's an awful lot of things that this Resilience and Security Commission can do to make a difference in tempering some of the variances in climate and economic, you know, both physical climate and the economic climate in South Central Alaska.
Thanks, Scott Waterman. And Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society. Any last words for you on the Resilience and Security Commission proposal?
Yeah, I really appreciate both Willie and Scott's comments. I think they're on point. And I maybe just wanted to add a slightly different tack, which is if you are listening to this and you are saying, hey, this is a great idea and I want to be involved in it, there is room for you. As we said several times on this program, this is just a grassroots effort and there's room for everybody in it. So if you're interested in helping move this thing forward and you want to shape it, we really hope to hear from you. You could email us at kbayconservation@gmail.com and we'll get right back to you. And we'd love to have you help any way that you can. I'll just say that one more time. You can, if you want to participate and help out, email at kbayconservation@gmail.com and we'd love to have you.
Thanks, Penelope Haas from Kachemak Bay Conservation Society, Willie Dunn of Homer, and Scott Waterman of Homer. And thanks to all the guests. This has been The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson.